You're listening to Dig Deep on KEXE KBXE. Conservative Chuck Marone is here to defend Pete Stauber. No, he's here to tell us about Pete Stauber's positions on issues that matter to District 8, Aaron Brown on Radinovich, and Skip Sandman a little bit.
I've been helping Skip a little just because I know I'm going to hear from his people if I don't. So far,
we've talked about mining, we've talked about immigration. Let's move in to healthcare. Should we start with Pete Stauber? What's his sentence
sure.
like?
Repeal Obamacare. No, I'm just kidding.
That's actually right in the picture that you have on that
picture.
Printout.
It's very interesting, and I do want to get into is that the Republicans promised to repeal Obamacare, and now we swung and missed on that one.
Yeah.
So here's from the Stauber website the healthcare statement. It says, "I support high quality, affordable and accessible healthcare, which is patient-driven and physician-guided, putting individuals in charge of their healthcare rather than the government." Not a long white paper, just one kind of statement, kind of from Republican talking points. Republicans have long said we should have patients guiding things, and it's between a person and their doctor, and we want individuals in charge, not the government. We don't want death panels. We don't want Obamacare. We don't want a big government system, except for Medicare. We like that.
And the VA. Yeah.
And,
Right.
So 60% of people, we're good with it. But like for the other 40%, this is what we don't want the government in charge of our healthcare.
I think the only real difference between Stauber's statement there and what Obamacare is maybe the last three words, but even that, I mean, the whole reason we have Obamacare and not Medicare for All, which is the new push that Democrats have and that Joe Radinovich describes in his website and his positioning, the only reason we don't already have that after 2008 was because of the desire by some, including some in the Democratic Party, to have what Stauber describes in the first sentence, which is patient-guided, more of a keep your doctor, try to, all of the negotiations on that front is what led to what we now call Obamacare, which is now kind of, they did not succeed in repealing Obamacare, but they have successfully neutered and mangled portions of it through other means.
Let me state the Republican position off of just restating Stauber to provide some illumination. I support patient-driven, physician-guided healthcare with individuals in charge of it rather than the government, with the government paying for almost all of it.
Yeah. Right. Because that's the thing that's so frustrating about coming from the liberal side. It's so frustrating because it's not like we are spending a small amount of money on healthcare.
No.
And we were asking to spend a large amount. It's that we're already spending a vast, vast amount, and it's a flawed, messed up system.
We're going to have government paid for healthcare laundered through private drug companies and insurance companies for the most, asset rich classes of our country. That's an insane policy. And when I read, we can get into, you got to go over Radinovich's.
Oh yeah, we'll cover that.
When I read this, I read the incoherence that comes from the current Congress. The current Congress said, we're going to repeal Obamacare and we're going to go back to, a more market-based system and we're going to take those approaches. And then they had both houses of Congress, they had the presidency, they all ran on doing this. They were not ambiguous about what they were going to do. They put up every kind of bill, like we'll repeal and replace, we'll just do a flat repeal. None of it got any traction at all. And I think that, Stauber's position is a very mainstream Republican position. I don't think there's any question about it. People who want to believe in limited government will read this and read limited government into it. I think people who understand the system and what's going on will read this as a continuation of, like I said, a massive amount of our GDP being extracted from the economy, laundered from the government through insurance and pharmacy companies.
And private. And then, I mean, keep in mind that employer funded healthcare is still a huge chunk of the healthcare spending, and
absolutely.
So it's, in a way, you can look at that as a tax of a sort, but they don't like to call that a tax.
So I think from a policy standpoint, this is basically we'll continue to really do nothing about healthcare, and hope that the 7% increases a year in premiums that you have and the reduction in coverage and all this doesn't hurt too much.
That it's tolerable and that you won't blame us for it.
Right, right.
Basically, now, which is what the system we had before.
I am, and I think you're sensing this, like very frustrated by this because I am absolutely think the Medicare for All approach is horrible. But, you know, this is basically like we're going to hang on as long as we can until we get to Medicare for All. So why don't you go ahead and...
Yeah. Well, Joe Rodinovich's position is stated exactly as Chuck just described it, Medicare for All, which has become the rhetorical way of describing universal single-payer health care. In other words, more like what Canada has, or a little bit like what the UK has, or other European countries, though not all of them, because a lot of European... most of the world... the industrialized world has some kind of government-funded healthcare system. And some of it is more like what Obamacare is supposed to be. The Germans do a system that's kind of mostly private, but government-backed. And so there's some successful healthcare systems that aren't universal single-payer that kind of get credit for being that. But moving to the Canadian or the British model, for example, would be really what they're talking about with Medicare for All. And they'd take the Medicare system that everybody supports, Republicans too.
I mean, you ask people, do you like Medicare? Yes, I love Medicare. People who are on Medicare love Medicare. People like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a few complexities to it and things that people don't like about the bureaucracy of it. But that's true of the insurance industry. So basically, let's take that system that is available to people 65 and older or unique situations with the medical assistance program and put everybody on it, cradle to grave. Everybody gets to go on that. The benefit, the costs would be great. We'd be adding a tremendous amount of cost to the bottom line of the government. But on the other hand, employers would be able to get out of having to pay expensive healthcare plans unless they wanted to add supplemental plans as attractants, which is what you see in Europe and what you see in Canada. And then you'd get everybody out of, you'd basically shut down large portions of the insurance industry. And you'd make the role that the insurance industry has, which is cost containment. That's what the insurance people would tell you. We're the ones keeping costs down. And they would give that job to the government, essentially, to negotiate with drug companies and medical providers to keep rates affordable. That's how it works in other countries. And it's premised on the idea that we just shift the money we spend on healthcare through our employer's paycheck, through our premium payments, our co-pays, all that money we already pay would instead go towards a medical tax, essentially a Medicare tax, and it would pay for healthcare. That way we'd all have it. Wouldn't matter if, you know, if we were laid off or if we wanted to start a business or if, you know, we were disabled, everybody would have it. And that's the very appealing sounding argument behind Medicare for All. And really, it's been bounced around the Democratic side of the ledger for a long time. You know, Ted Kennedy proposed it. Ted Kennedy and Democrats were responsible for shooting down Richard Nixon's healthcare plan because they wanted single payer, when in fact Nixon's plan was arguably more liberal than Obama's.
Sure.
Because they wanted the whole thing, you know, and back then you can look at that as a mistake. You look back and you could have done something different 20 or 50 or 100 years ago. But that's what Joe Rodinovich proposes. You know, are we getting a tremendous amount of specifics on how that would go down? No. Are there some reasons for concern? I think you might be about to cite the recent study.
I am, but I'm probably not going to do it in the way you think.
Oh, okay. Well, but it shows a tremendous expense, you know, obviously, in converting, and particularly the transition would be challenging because it's an enormous change. And so change is, in fact, the thing that once you start doing it becomes the negative. You know, like everybody having healthcare is a positive thing, tests very well. Change in the healthcare system gets scary. Like, you mean, if I have a good health plan through work, and I do, and you're telling me I'm going to give that up and I'm going to have something that everybody has.
Right.
You know, it's not hard to draw a line that says, you know what, maybe not. You know, as a liberal who has been frustrated with the fact that our healthcare doesn't follow us around job to job, situation to situation, I see that as tremendously inefficient. And it's killing our people who would want to start a small business, or it's just people make life decisions based on keeping insurance, which is just ridiculous as far as I'm concerned. But getting there is going to be a challenge. And so Rodinovich thinks we should start.
So the study that Aaron cited, I don't even know who put it together, some university or something.
Yeah, and it's received some criticism, but it was widely discussed.
And it's a credible study.
Yeah, it is.
It basically said, if we do Medicare for all, it's going to cost like a gazillion jillion dollars.
Yeah. We should probably use the real number, but I don't have it in front of me.
No, I don't have it in front of me either. It doesn't really matter because it was like an eye-popping, like enormous number. And Paul Ryan's office, the Speaker of the House, put this out and said, you know, really, this is what you want? You want a gazillion, jillion dollars to add into the budget? And then it was like subtly pointed out later that, hey, this is actually less than what we're spending as an economy as a whole for healthcare. And that's, I guess at the end of the day, like that's my frustration. Is that, you know, what Obamacare is right now today, and this is where I think the Republicans have put themselves in a box. If you are kind of a market-based system, if you really want people to have relationships with their doctor and be able to drive down costs while getting great health care, this is like the worst of all worlds. We've created a system where the government will backstop and pay for almost all health care for people who can access the system. Huge amounts of people get nothing or go without. There's a huge deductible for largely like the working class and the people who are working today. And in the macro sense, there's a massive wealth transfer from the young and the poor to the elderly and the wealthy. That's the way that our system is set up today. And by going, we've made it so ridiculous from a cost standpoint, where not only, you know, this whole system of we'll pay you for each procedure that you do and it induces like 20 procedures that you don't want or need, we'll pay you, you know, everybody has their ridiculous story about how they know someone who was in the hospital and got a thing of soup delivered to them and it was a $200 bill. Like all these like craziness things that we understand are like side effects of this. We have created a system where we also don't allow death panels. And a death panel is not like you live, you die. That's the way we've described it now. It's the cost control mechanism where the government actually says, you know what, we can pay for that and we can't pay for that. That's what your insurance company does today. We hate that. And so what we as Americans have said is we're doing away with that. And the compromise that we've made in Obamacare is that, okay, we won't say we're not going to pay for that. We'll just pay for everything. And we've gotten to the point where Medicare for all is actually now a cheaper option in our economy than the current system. And that's why I think, you know, it where we're at today, which is essentially enshrined in Pete Stauber's, you know, campaign point here, is untenable in so many ridiculous ways. And I think it's actually making Medicare for all, which I find to be a really bad idea.
Well, I'm curious, why do you think it's a bad idea?
Because I don't think it is a good way to have a dynamic healthcare system, one that is innovative, one that provides higher levels of service. I think that instead of the government being the customer, I think that individuals need to be the customer. I would like to find us to have ways to have individuals have their own individual accounts. And if they're government backed and government, you know, supported, I'm way better off going down that road and having you pay for your own healthcare through that mechanism than I am having just everyone under one like roof where the incentive is to drive down, either bloat the costs or drive down the quality by, you know, government fiat. I want individuals to run the system. And that's the part of the Stauber part that I think ticks on the conservative side. You know, like I want patient-driven healthcare. I want people, individuals in charge of healthcare. But from the policy standpoint, that's not what we're getting. That's not where any Republican proposal is taking us today.
I'm kind of struck by, you know, one of the challenges with health. Anytime you talk about healthcare, you get into anecdotes. And, you know, people all have, it's healthcare is one of those things you don't get out of life without a long relationship with the healthcare industry or healthcare system. And so everybody's got different stories. And I'm just really curious how a system like what you describe, you know, where individuals are making the decisions, accounts for, and this seems to be the crux of the healthcare debate. How do you account for people in either unique circumstances or transitional circumstances a layoff, wants to start a small business, you know, left an abusive relationship, whatever, any of, you name whatever reason people would be in a situation like this, how do they afford it in the meantime? And how do we set the criteria, which again gets back into the death panel argument?
Right.
You know, right now we have death panels, they're sitting in an insurance industry, and people say, we don't want death panels sitting in a
government, right?
In the government.
I'd rather the insurance company have the death panel.
You know, but I don't see a you know, a particular difference other than we get to elect a government and we have no idea what's going on at the corporate level of insurance companies.
Right. Well, I think we do. And well, it's not something we want to think about.
It's kind of like how they make sausage.
Right.
You know, you don't want to know, you know that they're looking at a table and saying these people are lost and we're just going to not pay for them. And that's what nobody wants to admit. That's probably because we have a poor relationship with the concept of death in this country. But nevertheless, you're left wondering, what's the system that can truly follow people around and take care of them, knowing that healthcare as a business is a losing business, because no matter who you are, you're going to get sick and die.
Right.
And maybe you get sick and get better three or four or a dozen times, and then you get sick and die. And so how do we pay for what is essentially a terrible business model, helping people who are sick, and make it profitable? And that seems to be what the whole healthcare industry has become, is a major part of our profit sector. You know, companies that make a lot of money are rewarded through capitalism. But that leaves all these people who are bad for the numbers on the government roll through Medicaid and through just catastrophic funding that gets doled out to the hospitals who pay for people who come in at the last possible moment. How do we make a system that avoids that nonsense, that avoidable nonsense,
right,
while still preserving, as you point out, hey, we make good drugs in this country. We develop great medical technology, the best in the world.
Yeah, we have these incentives to improve things.
Right, and that's a good thing, right. And we don't want to give that up, and so I respect that as an argument. But on the other hand, we do things in this country to people that is just so unnecessary and bureaucratic what we're doing in the private industry regarding healthcare is as bad or worse than anything that's been done in the government in terms of obfuscation and distortion of reality and all this stuff and bureaucracy. And
that's where I think the conservatives right now, the Republicans today, the conservative instinct is failing us in healthcare, because the conservative instinct is to resist like change and kind of hang on to what you have.
Mm-hmm.
Like let's keep this because it works for some people, and yeah, you're identifying people it's not working for, but I don't want to just like throw the baby out with the bathwater. Let's fix some little fix for them and mm-hmm. keep the system the way it is. As a governing philosophy works until you get into something as untenable as this. And when you get into something as untenable as this, what you do is you empower progressives to experiment with brand new, massive programs. Use it like how would I do it? I think we have like 15 seconds left. So at the end of the day, individuals need to be able to pay for their own healthcare. This is not like, we call this insurance. The three of us here could go through life with car insurance and never use it. You know, we could never get in a car crash. You will use health. You are going to die. Everyone listening to this today is at some point going to go through an end of life process.
This is a Republican position, people.
But I mean, do that. You look at it, and from like an actuarial science standpoint, we know how much money you need to go through life for healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are going to be statistically higher than that. Some people are going to be statistically lower than that. Let's backstop the people who are higher. Let's allow the people who are lower to be the ones who drive cost containment. And let's let everybody have the money that is being spent either on their behalf or by them. Let's let them have that in a place where they can use it for medical care. It's not really even a difficult concept. It's just different.
And it's politically difficult to deliver, because what we're really talking about doing is abolishing a very powerful lobby.
Yes, yes. And that I think is the kind of key crux here from a policy standpoint, is that you can go to Medicare for all and insurance companies won't like it, but they'll find some way to soothe insurance companies. Pharmacy companies won't necessarily like it, but they'll find some way to soothe them. If you go to a system like I'm talking about, you don't need insurance companies. You do, but they're vast. I mean, they're a tiny, tiny fraction of the overall economy, not this huge behemoth they are today. So you do have, and plus it's a scary thing, you're asking people to go out and purchase their own, you know, go up to the counter and say, how much does this cost? And, you know, there's a book by Atul Gawande that goes through end of life. And I'll summarize that book in 10 seconds by saying, we do a ton of procedures at the end of life today that if you look at it and go through it, don't add to quality of life at all. In fact, they hinder it. And when you move people into palliative care and hospice care, not only is the cost a lot less, but the quality of life and the end of life is so much better. Those are decisions that humans, that we Americans, should be able to make. And we're really confronted with a weird set of incentives to do the next procedure and do the next thing and spend a gargantuan sum of money, which, oh, by the way, is really good for the industry that's delivering those services to us. I think we have all the incentives of it wrong. And I'd like to see us change that. Nowhere in Stauber's platform, nowhere in a Republican platform, nowhere in a Republican vision or conservative vision do we have that. The only thing we have is stick with the current insanity, which is not stable or functional, or go to gazillion, gajillion Medicare for all, which, by the way, is less money than what you're spending on crazy insanity today. So I'm with you there.
Gazillion, gajillion didn't test well.
Gazillion, gajillion didn't test well. Right. So, you know, to me, I feel like this is one of those places where from the Chuck Marone school of policy, we have like bad and worse. And I couldn't identify which one is bad and which one is worse.
I think Democrats could work with Chuck Marone. The problem is you're not in charge of the Republican Party.
I wish the Republicans had a true healthcare reform vision that matched their rhetoric. And they don't. And that's just the sad reality, is that they don't have a true policy reform rhetoric that matches their vision. If people out there listening want to see what this looks like, there's a book called Catastrophic Care. Go read that. It is a genius representation of what a true market-based system would be, and it would be universal coverage.
It's Chuck Marone and Aaron Brown. It's Dig Deep in our podcast-only edition. I'm going to let them loose on District 8.
I have, right? When we get to the podcast-only, I may finally discredit myself for good and kind of eliminate my capacity to be on the show. So this might be the last you hear from me.
Okay. I think that's bye-bye. A good teaser there.